Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bovakama Daf Pei Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Pei Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Mekuros L'Tanoim Shecholkim Im Yesh Boishes Lavodim. Sources for the Tanoim that happen to argue whether or not there is a boshes payment in the case of embarrassment of a slave. The Gemara. Hachovel be'eved kenani shel acherim chayov be'kulon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein lavodim boshes. According to the first opinion, one who injures a heathen slave owned by someone else, all the five payments are made. And we've spoken extensively what the five payments are. Included in them is the boshes, the embarrassment fee, payment for having caused embarrassment. And that is paid in the event that one embarrasses someone's slave or as a result of the injury impacted, embarrassment results, so there is a embarrassment payment to be made. According to Rabbi Yehuda, avodim, slaves do not have boshes. My taima de Rabbi Yehuda. What's the basis of Rabbi Yehuda? Omar Kro. The Pasuk says in the context of Boshes, the Torah portion that deals with embarrassment, it says, Ki inotsu anoshim yachtov, ish ve'achiv. And we learn from that Pasuk, b'mi shiyesh lo achva, one who has the concept or the relationship of brotherhood. Yotzo eved she'ein lo achva. A slave is not said to have a legal bond to anybody. He doesn't have brotherhood. V'rabbonon, the Rabbonon who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, what do they say about that? Ochivu b'mitzvos, a slave is considered ochiv, a brother to other Jews, in the sense that just like other Jews have an obligation to fulfill mitzvahs, to fulfill commandments, so too the heathen slave owned by a Jew has a mitzvah, has the obligation of fulfilling mitzvahs. You notice a new marking, a crown shape, and on the side of the Gemara, you notice we have a Mivneh structural note. Kushios, these are questions, ala makoros, on the sources, sheviu l'rabiuda l'rabonon. So initially you'll see a double underline highlights the names of Rabbi Yehuda, and then a few lines later you see again a double underline where it says Elomeata l'Rabbonon. So taking each one of their respective sources, we will ask questions. So now the Gemara, Elomeata l'Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Zomeme Eved lo Yaharogu. If you have false slaves that testify about an Eved, let us say they testified that an Eved committed a murder, and it turns out that those testifiers, those witnesses were liars, they were found to be Edim Zomim, and two other witnesses said, how can you have testified about that slave committing the murder on such a date? You were with us in a different place at that time. Generally speaking, the Torah says that when you have that kind of lying testimony, the witnesses are punished with what they tried to impose on the defendant. But if you're going to say that a slave, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not called Ochiv, so then the false witnesses that testified about the slave, as we explained, would not be subject to court execution, which is what we ordinarily carry out to someone who is a murderer. So now the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Zoymimei Eved should not be put to death. Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Vasisem lo kasher zomam lasus le'achiv. You do to the false witnesses what they schemed to do to Achiv. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, a slave is not called Achiv. Omar Rava, Omar Rav Sheshes, Omar Kra, Uvi'artaho Ra, Mikibercha, Mikomakom. In the section dealing with the false witnesses, the Torah states additionally that you shall eliminate the wicked, the evil, from your midst. And that is to be done under all circumstances, even if the testimony happened to concern a heathen slave who's not really Achiv. But nevertheless, there is the need to eliminate false witnesses, and hence we would execute those false witnesses who had testified about the heathen slave as having committed a capital offense. Elo me'ato, the Rabbonon, Eved Yehei Kosher L'Malchus. But according to the Rabbonon, the slave who the Rabbonon call Achiv should be considered acceptable for monarchy, to serve as a king. The Pasuk by monarchy, it says, Mikerev Achecha, from the midst of your brothers, you are to appoint a king. So, would you say that an Eved is fit to serve as a king? Amri, we respond, Uletameich tikshiloch ger ledivrei hakol. If you're asking a question on the Rabbonon, where we know that a slave doesn't serve as a king, even though he's called Achecha, you could ask the same thing regarding a ger, a convert. According to all opinions, Rashi says on the third narrow line, Tikshiloch ger sheleidoso v'hiroso b'gdusha, where his birth and his conception was in a state of Judaism. In other words, the mother had been Jewish at the time that she conceived him. Afilu l'Reb Yehuda yesh lo achva. Even according to Reb Yehuda, he would be called achva. Uposel malchus, he is unfit to serve as a king. Afilu l'shoiter ba'ama. Elim kein imo Yisrael, unless his mother is from amongst the Jewish people. According to what Rashi is saying over here, it would be insufficient for the mother to have been a convert, even though the conception and birth of this particular child is after she had become a regular Jewess. But she's not called Imo Mi'Yisrael. She's not a woman that had been born into the Jewish people. So a ger, according to everybody, then you would say, well, he's called Achecha, and yet we don't accept him as a king. Elo Omar Kro, the reason the ger is posel from Malchus is the posuk says Mikerev Achecha, and we learn from that Mimuvchar Shebechecha, from the choicest amongst you. So that even though you see the term Achecha with regard to monarchy, nevertheless, this additional expression, Mikerev Achecha, tells me that the individual must be a choice individual. And hence we will exclude the case of the Eved according to the Rabbanon, and the ger according to all opinions. Elo me'ato, l'rabbonon yehei eved kosher li'edus. According to the Rabbonon that say an eved is called achiv, let him be acceptable to serve as a witness, and we know not so. Dichtiv v'nei aid sheker ha'ed, sheker ona be'achiv. Why then, if according to the Rabbonon, achiv b'mitzvus is enough to consider the Eved subject to receiving, or because of his boshes, he is going to, the payment of boshes will be paid. Why then, according to the Rabbanon, would he not be able to serve as a witness? You'll notice we have special markings now. A diamond appears. It's one of our series markings. We have Ula featured with that, and then a very long marking that follows. And at the end of that long marking, you'll notice Mar Brei de Ravina is also featured in a diamond, and he is number two. On the side of our Gemara, we have Shnei Makoros, two sources, Ledin, She'eved Posoliatus, two sources that reveal how we know that a slave is unfit to serve as a witness. Zemuva Poi Kidei Lanois L'Sheilo Shikshu Al Hamokur Shalachachomim. This is brought here to answer the question of why is it, according to the Rabbanon, that an Eved, though he's called Ochiv, and therefore there's Boshes payment, why does he not serve, why is he disqualified from serving as a witness? I just want to repeat that the Gemara mentioned, in the case of testimony, you see that Ochiv is a factor, and according to the Rabbanon, the Eved fulfills the qualification of being calling Ochiv. We have then a long answer. Omar Ula, Edus lo motzis amris. You cannot say that an Eved, that a slave, a heathen slave, should be acceptable to serve as a witness. Asya, Edus b'kal v'chomer mi'isha. The disqualification of a heathen slave can be derived through kal v'chomer logic from the disqualification of a rank and file regular Jewish woman. Mind you, a woman who is fit to marry into the rest of the Jewish people. She's unfit to serve as a witness. A heathen slave is not fit or suitable to marry into the rank and file Jewish people. All the more so, he shall be disqualified from serving as a witness. The Gemara rejects this kal v'chomer by saying, "Ma li'isha shekein eino ru'uya l'mila," that a woman doesn't serve as a witness. Well, a woman also has another, we'll say, lacking in that she's not fit to be circumcised. Toimar be'eved shu roi l'mila, a slave is fit for and is to be circumcised, so that he has that advantage. So maybe he would be acceptable to serve as a witness. Katon yochiach. Let the minor male prove to the contrary. She yeshno b'mila, he has mila. Upasiliatus, and yet a cotton is unfit to serve as a witness. And by the same token, we will tell you that the Eved, though he has mila, is unfit to serve as a witness. Gemara responds, no, you can't prove Eved from the cotton. Ma le cotton she'eno b'mitzvahs. A minor is not obligated to fulfill any mitzvah. Tomer Bevet Shu B'mitzvahs. Should you say the same thing by slaves that are obligated to fulfill mitzvahs? Isha Tochiach. Well, then let the case of the woman prove that the slave nevertheless is disqualified. She Yeshna B'mitzvahs. A woman fulfills mitzvahs. She's obligated to fulfill mitzvahs. Upsula Liedus, and she's unfit to serve as a witness. The Chozer Hadin, and the logic will continue to revolve. If you're going to cite woman, what we say that she has the deficiency in that she doesn't have mila, and we go round and round. The proof you see in one is not like the proof that you see in the other. Hatsana shava shebohen, the common denominator between them, between isha and katan, the woman and the minor, shekein einon b'chol hamitzvus upsulin lahayid, they're not obligated to fulfill all the mitzvahs, and they're disqualified to serve as testimony. Afani ovias ho'eved sheino b'chol ha'mitzvahs u'pasuloid. I will thereby include the slave as well, who's not obligated to fulfill all of the mitzvahs, and he's therefore disqualified from serving as a witness, just like a woman and a minor. The Gemara, though, is unhappy, is not satisfied with that proof. Ma la'tzara shavah shebahen. How can you learn from the common denominator between woman and minor? Shekein eino ish. They're not considered ish. they're not considered adults. Masculine adults. Tomar be'evet shu ish. Should you be able to say the same thing regarding an evet that he's disqualified? But he is an ish. He's an adult male. Elo, Tasi, rather, we're going to have to... Up till now, we were not successful in deriving the disqualification of an evet as a witness from the combination of woman and minor. So where will I, yes, figure the disqualification of the evet as a witness? Elo, Tasi, Migazlon. Ma, in other words, I'll learn from Gazlon, who is an ish, he's an adult male, and he's unfit to serve as a witness. I'll compare then the Eved to that. No, ma le Eved, ma le Gazlon, shekein mais of Gormulo. The thief becomes disqualified because of his actions. He stole, he made himself into a wicked individual, so he's unfit to serve as a witness. Shekein Maisov Gormulo, his actions caused his disqualification. Toma B'Yevet, Shein Maisov Gormulo, should you disqualify the slave on the same grounds? He didn't do any disqualifying actions. He was born a slave. Elo, so how do I know that a slave is to be disqualified? Elo Tesi, Migazlon, Umecha Mehanoch. Combine the disqualification of a thief and one of the above mentioned points, a woman or minor, and if you put these together, we find by a thief and a woman that they're disqualified to serve as witnesses. By the same token, then we will disqualify a slave. Mor Bray the Ravina Omar, he cites an alternative source for Eved being posel liedus. Omar, kro lo yumsu ovois al bonim. Take note of the posuk on the side of the Gemara, Dvorim, Perik, Chovdalet, posuk, Tezayin. Let's read the posuk on the side. Lo yumsu ovois al bonim. That's the first part of the posuk. And then it says, uvonim lo yumsu al ovois. Ish b'cheto yumasu. This pasuk, on a simple translation level, is saying that fathers will not die because of their sons, and sons will not die because of their fathers. This pasuk has to do with the realm of testimony. Father cannot testify against son, son cannot testify against father. Once again, that's on the superficial reading level. However, we turn back to the Gemara, and once again we note the first part of the pasuk, which says Lo yumsu avos al bonim, and from this Mor Brei D'Ravina says Lo yumsu al pi avos she'ein lohem chayes bonim. That means testimony cannot be said by those fathers whose sons are not traced or viewed as related to them. That is a description of whom? Of a slave. A slave, when he bears children, they're not viewed as having any legal bond to their father. So the Pasuk is saying that people like that, avos, literally fathers, but for people, she'en lem chayes bonim, where their children are not traced after them, are not considered related to the fathers, which is a description of a slave, cannot serve as a witness. The isalka daitoch kidamrinon, if you were to think that the posuk is merely coming to tell me, lo yumsu avos al bonim be'edus bonim, that fathers shall not die as a result of the testimony of their sons, lichtoiv rachmono lo yumsu avos al b'nehem, the more appropriate grammatical form would have been that fathers shall not die through the testimony of their sons. But it doesn't say b'nehem in the posuk. It says my bonim, It says sons without the possessive form. So what does bonem indicate? Shma mino. This shows me the lo yumsu al pi avos sha'ein lahem chayes bonem, that people cannot be put to death. In other words, testimony cannot be set, cannot be testified by those that ein lahem chayes bonem, that is an eved, a slave. In simple terms, a slave is unfit to serve as a witness. And that is the very point that Mor Bravina, Braid Ravina, was coming to address as a second source for that point. And I say second means in the as far as the Gemara is concerned, Ula gave us his source, which was essentially a type of Kal V'chomer Tzad HaShaveh, common denominator, Limud, and Mor Braid Ravina citing this Pasuk. The Gemara asks, Elo me'ata, if this is your approach to the Pasuk, what about the continuation of the Pasuk? Ubonim lo yumsu alavois. Hachinami, are you going to explain it the same way? Lo yumsu al pi bonim, she'en lohem chayes ovis, that testimony shall not be said by those sons that don't have a legal relationship to their father. What or who would fit into that category? A ger, for example, a convert, when one converts from being a Gentile to Judaism, in legal terms, he is considered like a kotten hanoladomi. Ger shin is gair kotten shanoladomi. A ger, a convert who converts to Judaism, is like a newborn. And hence, in legal terms, he's not related to his father. So, if you're going to say that this pasuk, which deals with the laws of testimony, who's fit to serve as a witness and who's disqualified, eloger hachinami de posuliatus, are you going to then say that a convert to Judaism cannot serve as a witness? And that's not so. A convert is qualified to serve as a witness. Amri, the Gemara responds. Note, we have a very long answer here, long answer marking. The Gemara says, Hochi hashta, how can you compare the ger to the eved? Ger, now I just want to, by way of introduction to this long answer, on the one hand, we have the way we deal with the pasuk and how we explain the pasuk, and certainly you would get the feeling that a ger is disqualified. However, the Gemara is going to respond that in all due respect to the way we darshan the pasuk, there is an overriding type of logic that will lead us to conclude otherwise. If we can show after the beginning of the pasuk disqualifies avodim, slaves, and show a significant distinction, difference between a slave and a ger, and then apply some we'll call scriptural logic here, you will see how at the end of the day the pasuk is disqualifying only the eved and not the convert. So now let's continue with the Gemara. We said, how can you compare the two? Ger nehi de'ein lo chayes lamala, granted that he does not have any relationship with those in previous generations, lamata yesh lo chayes, but the subsequent generations, after a person converts to Judaism and he has children, those children are said to be his children, related to him. The ger is their father, lafuki eved, to the exclusion of a heathen slave. The ein lo chayes lo lamala v'lo lamata. He has no chayes, he has no yichus, concept of relation, nor above earlier generations, nor below, nor children, progeny. The isaka daitoch ger pusel liedus. Now here the Gemara takes a few lines to develop the havamin, the alternative possible thinking, which we reject. But how would that alternative way of thinking unfold? If you were to think ger posel mi'edus, that a convert would be unfit to serve as a witness, lichtoiv rachmona, let the Torah write, lo yumsu avos al b'nehem. Instead of the word bonim, the Torah would write that fathers cannot be put to death through their own sons' testimony. So that the first part of the pasuk would be telling us a fairly, we'll say, basic law, but not addressing slaves, not disqualifying slaves. And we would say, if we were going to say that the ger is unfit, let the beginning of the pasuk say, lo yumsu avos al b'nehem, l'chidamrinon, as we say, lo yumsu be'edis bonim, that fathers are not to be executed as a result of the testimony of their sons. V'nichtoiv rachmona, and as far as the latter part of the pasuk, let it say uvonim lo yumsu al avos. The shamis mina trei, we would be able to learn from that 2 points. Chada one lo yumsu bonim be'edus avos, that sons cannot be put to death as a result of testimony of their fathers. V'idoch, and the second point, lo yumsu al pi bonim shein lohem chayes avos, that people cannot be put to death, cannot be testified against by those who don't have a relationship with their father, namely a ger. So that the latter part of the pasuk would disqualify the ger. The eved nafkole bekal v'chomer miger, and the eved, the slave disqualification could be derived through kal v'chomer logic from the ger. Uma ger de lamalo hu de ein lo chayas avolamati yesh lo chayas posel liedus. Mind you, the convert, true above earlier generations, he's not associated, but subsequent generations, his children, his offspring are associated with him, are related to him, and he's not fit to serve as a witness. And that, as I always said, would be learned from the end of the pasuk. Eved shein lo chayes lo lamala v'lo lamata, a slave, a heathen slave that has no yichus above nor below earlier generation, subsequent generation, eino din shei posel leidus, all the more so he would be disqualified to serve as a witness. All of that, the eved's disqualification would be through kal v'chom without any need for a pasuk. But since the beginning of the pasuk says bonim and it doesn't say b'nehem, and de mashma from that we learn lo yumsu al pi avos shein lehem chayes bonim, that testimony cannot be said to indict someone who has no relation with his sons, he's not legally related to his sons, that is a slave, that's how we view a slave. Shma mino, from this we learn, from the fact that the beginning of the pasuk is stated to exclude slaves, eved shein lo chayes lo lamala v'lo lamata hu de posel liedus, the slave alone who lacks chayes earlier and later generationally, he is disqualified to serve as a witness. Avol ger kivan deyesh lo chayes lamata, but the ger who does have a connection with his next generation is acceptable to serve as a witness. V'chiteima lichtoiv rachmona uvanim lo yumsu al avoisehem. You might say that, you know, if the ger is kosher as a witness, why does the end of the pasuk? Why is it stated in this misleading fashion? Wouldn't it have been better for the end of the pasuk to say, "Uvanim lo yumsu al avoisehem"? Loma li dekosav rachmona uvanim lo yumsu al avois. Why does, in fact, the pasuk say it stated that way? Al avos, the mashma lo yumsu al pi bonim shein lehem chayes avos, which misleads me into thinking that testimony should not be said by those who have no father connection, which would exclude a convert. Why does the pasuk in fact, appear in this misleading fashion? Wouldn't it, just to repeat, wouldn't it have been better for it to say, Lo yumsu al avoisehem, that sons are not testified against by their own actual fathers? So the Gemara answers, Aidi dekosav lo yumsu avos abonim, since the beginning of the pasuk spoke in those grammatical terms, Lo yumsu avos abonim, so kosav nami, the continuation of the pasuk, for the purpose of maintaining a streamlined, unified grammatical presentation, it says uvonim lo yumsu al ovois, without the possessive form. But I emphasize here, but not to exclude a convert from serving as a witness. So as you look back over the majority of this Omid of Gemara, you can see that we were presenting sources for the slave being disqualified as serving as a witness, while at the same time contrasting him with a convert who is acceptable to serve as a witness. We continue in the Gemara. Chirish Shoita V'Koton Pigiyason Ra. The Mishnah said that meeting up with a Chirish, a deaf mute, a shoit, an imbecile, or a cotton, it only spells trouble. Ime the Rav Shmuel bar Abba Megronya have a nesivo le la Abba, the Rebbe Abba. The mother of Rav Shmuel was married to a man by the name of Rebbe Abba. Kas vesinhu lenichsi meluk. The word Malug is found in the Rashi Girsa. She assigned her Nichse Malug. Those are properties that she brought into the marriage from her father's home. Nichse Malug are a type of property that the husband is allowed to benefit from its fruit production, but he is not allowed to sell it, for example. It's considered, the principal is considered the woman's. The fruit benefit, use of fruit, is for the husband. This woman, after she was married, she sold or she signed over her nichsei malug l'Rav Shmuel bar Abba bro to her son. Baser d'shchiva, after she, the mother, passed away, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ozol Rav Shmuel bar Abba kamei d'Rav Yirmiya, the son went to Rav Yirmiya bar Abba, ukmei benichsei, and Rav Yirmiya assigned the property to that son, to Rav Shmuel. Ozal Rabbi Abba, the husband, went omra lemilse kamei de Rav Hoshaya, ozal Rav Hoshaya omra kamei de Rav Yehuda, omar lei, and Rav Yehuda said, hachi omar Shmuel, thusly says Shmuel, Ha'isha shemochra benichsei malug b'chaye baila umesa, a woman who in the lifetime of her husband sold off, transferred ownership of her nichsei malug in the lifetime of her husband, and then the woman died. Ha'baal motzi miyad ha'lekuchos, the husband has the right to extricate the properties from those purchasers. As you can see, we have a markings, house markings that appear in opposite directions. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei Klali, a general topic heading, and it is Kinyan Peros, the fact that someone has a Kinyan, a ownership of the fruit rights. I have a Kinyan Haguf. Is that tantamount to be considered ownership of the principle? Guflerings, the body, the item itself. In this case, we're dealing with fields and the harvest, the produce of those fields. The produce of the fields being something, an entitlement to the husband. Does that make it such that the husband is considered the owner of the principle? The house markings that you see are featured on the side, the Nosei / Mivneh heading. The houses appear in two directions. It highlights the Machlokes HaMoroyim, Isha Nesua She Iknisa Nichaseha Livna, a married woman who entitled, who assigned title of her properties to her son, and then V'achakach Mesa, Shalmi Nichaseha, who is the owner of those properties. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, the son, and Rabbi Yudah said, the husband. We continue in the Gemara. Note, we have a long marking. Amrua Kamei Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba. The ruling of Rabbi Yudah was stated to Rabbi Yirmiyah Ba'aba, Omar Lahu, and Rabbi Yirmiyah, who disagreed with Rabbi Yudah, says, Ano Masniso Yodana. I know a Tanaic source. We emphasize that it takes a number of lines to develop the point. But as a result of the source that I know and the continued discussion afterwards, Rav Yirmiyah will demonstrate how the son has the rights to the property. Omar Lehu Ano Masnisi Yodana Desnan, the source reads, HaKesiv Nechosav Livnoi Liachar Moisoi. A father assigned ownership of his property to his son after his death, after the father's death. What does that mean in practical terms? It means that the goof of the property, the principal, is transferred to the son immediately. However, the father continues using the fruits until his death. Haben eino yochol limkor mitnei shein brushus av. The son cannot sell because it's considered in the possession of the father. Vav eino yochol limkor mitnei shein ksuvin leben. The father cannot sell the properties of someone else because they've already been assigned to the son. Mocharav, if the father should try to conduct a transaction over those properties, Mechurim, the sale will be effective ad shiomus, until the father dies. At the point that the father dies, the son clearly takes over. Mochar haben ein lo lokech ad shiomus so'av. Let's say the son, during the lifetime of the father, wanted to make some money, so he sold those properties that he was assigned. The purchaser does not get the benefit of those properties, the produce, ad shiyomus av, until the father dies. Kimayas av miha is le lokeach. We can derive from this that when the father does die, so the purchaser who bought from the son gets ownership of it. Fiyafa gav, and this is so even if the meis haben b'chayoav. The loss of Lidei Haben. Even if the son himself who conducted the sale died in the lifetime of his father, where the property never reached the son never reached the point where he had any benefit from the property. And yet, the purchaser who bought from that son is able to keep it. That is Karebi Shimon ben Lokish. That is in accordance with the opinion of Reish Lakish, who will be featured in the next number of lines. We'll be dealing with Reish Lakish and his expounding on that point. Diomar Reish Lakish says regarding this Tanaic source, Lo shna meis aben b'chayoav, de lo asu liyodei deben. Regardless of whether the son died in the father's lifetime, where the property never got to the son's actual possession, lo shna mei so'av b'chaya ben, da'asu lidei de ben, nor if the father had died before the son died, and the son actually acquired the properties. Kono lokeach. Either way, the sale conducted by that son is effective, and the purchaser becomes the owner. There is an extensive section of Gemara that we're going to skip initially. And we have a note on the side. There's a starred note. And it says as follows. Me'acha shehuzkir shitas Reish Lakish. After, now that we've mentioned Reish Lakish's opinion, the bechol mikre kona lokeach, that under all circumstances, the one who purchased from that son acquires. Shehu habasis ledivrei Rabbi Yirmiyah. This idea that shows, we'll say, the prominence of the son is actually the basis for Rabbi Yirmiyah. We saw above Rabbi Yirmiyah Baba, who entitled the son to win over the father in the case of where the mother had assigned her nichse maluk to that son. Dino the Reish Lakish mevusas al shitaso, the din of Reish Lakish that said it doesn't matter whether the son died before the father or the father died before the son. The kinyan peros sheyesh la'av, the kinyan peros that the father had in that source, eino kinyan aguf, is not tantamount to owning the principal of the land. So since the father's kinyan peros, usufruct, rights that he had, is not considered the ownership of the principal of the land, the son was able to conduct the sale. Hagemara b'sochas agrayim v'via machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish binyan zeh. Within the bracket section, this issue of kinyan peros, the usufruct rights, is that equivalent of to the kinyan aguf, to ownership of the principal or not? After the brackets, the discussion concerning Rav Yirmiyah Baba entitling the son to those properties continues, where the Gemara says, after the brackets of Anan Hashto Bein Rav Yirmiyah Baba Bein Rav Yura Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish Svirulahu, both of the names we saw above in the house markings actually subscribe to Reish Lakish, that Kinyan Peros is not considered Kinyan Aguf. And the Gemara then will go on to highlight Rabbi Yirmiyah Baba and then Rabbi Yehuda in their rulings from above. That having been said, we go over the bracketed section. The Itmar, Mochar Haben B'chayoav, if the son sold the properties that he had received from his father, and he sold those properties when the father was still alive. Umeis Haben B'chayoav, and the son died before the father. The son died in the father's lifetime. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kana Lokeach, the purchaser does not acquire anything. Reish Lakish Omar Kana Lokeach, and Reish Lakish says that the purchaser does gain possession of the purchase. Don't forget, the son had sold these properties to a purchaser in the lifetime of the father, and the son died before the father died. Reish Lakish says the sale is a good sale. And now the Gemara goes over the opinions. You see that we've used this crown shape in order to highlight Rabbi Yochanan and then Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Lo Kona Lokeach. The purchaser is not going to be able to lay claim to the property. Omar Loch, Rabbi Yochanan will tell you, Ki Kotoni Masnisin Mochara Ben Lo Kona Lokeach Achimos Aben Vachimaya Soav Isle Lokeach. The Mishnah with the inference that the son who sells will not be a successful sale to the purchaser until the father dies. When the father dies, we can then say the sale was an effective sale. That teaching is true, but it's limited. The lo meis haben b'chayav dosu l'dei haben. The son did not die during the lifetime of the father. If he didn't die during the life of the father, then that son became the full owner, lock, stock, and barrel of the property. Avol meis haben b'chayav. If the son died in the lifetime of the father, de lo osu lidei de ben, where the property never became the possession of the son. The son never was able to benefit from those properties. Kimayas avnami lesle lelokeach, when the father eventually dies, the purchaser will not be able to take possession of the land. Almo kosovar, you see from this that in the event that the son died in the lifetime of the father, the sale that that son conducted is void. This shows us that Rabbi Yochanan holds kinyan peros ki kinyan haguf domi. The kinyan peros that the father had is as if it's tantamount to saying that the father owned the principal. The chiz oven, and when the son conducted the sale, lav di day's oven, he was selling something not his. As we say often, he was selling the Brooklyn Bridge. To repeat the main point, and we have this diamond marking to highlight the centrality of this idea, on the side of our Gemara, we note, Havlotas amachloikis bagdoras kinyan aperos yavi ki kinyan aguf ilo. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that the son's sale, in the event that the son sold it during the lifetime of his father, and the son also died before the father, where the son didn't gain actual possession of the field, he couldn't conduct a sale. Because the kinyan peros, the usufruct rights that the father had, is tantamount to his, the father owning the principal. So that what the son was selling wasn't anything of the sons to sell in the first place. Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish Omar Kona Lokeach. Rabbi Shimon Lokish, under the same circumstances, says that the purchaser does acquire. Ki kotani masisin mochar ben ein lokeach ad shi yomus av. The Mishnah that said that if the son conducted a sale, the purchasers don't have anything until the father dies. Kimayas av mias is le lelokeach. When the father eventually dies, those purchasers that purchased from the son during the lifetime of the father do take possession. Lo shna lo meis haben b'chayav. It doesn't make a difference whether the son did not die in the father's lifetime. The osuli de ben. If that's the case, as soon as the father died, the son inherited and became his. So the sale that son had conducted would be a good sale. But even Veloshna Meis HaBen B'Chayav, even in a case where the son predeceased the father, Delo Osu Lidei the Ben, where the properties never reached the son's actual possession, Kona Lokeach, the purchaser acquires, the transaction that son conducted was effective. Amakosovar, you see from here, Kinyan Peros, the usufruct writes that the father had lav kikinyan aguf domi. It's not considered as if that father had possession of the principal of the land. V'chi kozovin, and when that son was selling, the day kozovin, he was selling his own, that which he had the power to sell. Just to repeat, why did he have the power to sell? Because the usufruct writes that the father had did not make it like the father's, rather it's like the son's, and what the son was selling was his own. He had the right to conduct the sale of those things that he owned. V'yanan hashto bein Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba vein Rabbi Yehuda, the two names that we had cited at the upper part of the page, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba and Rabbi Yehuda, those two who were arguing, does the son get it when she, the mother, had assigned the son those properties? And she did so after the husband was in the picture. The husband entering the picture, when you're dealing with Nifse Malug, we mentioned in passing that the husband has the rights to use the produce, to benefit from the produce. The husband... had what we would call a kinyan peros on it. Does the husband's kinyan peros prevent the son from gaining possession of the field when his mother died? So we saw that Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, he entitles the son to it. According to Rav Yehuda, the husband gets it. So we continue in the Gemara by telling you, by laying down a premise that Ve'anan and we, Hashta, now, Bein Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba, Bein Rav Yehuda, both of those Amoroyim, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, they hold like Reish Lakish, that Kenyan Peros, I add, Kenyan Peros of the husband, Lav to Kenyan Haguf, is not tantamount to owning the principle of the land. The Ka'omar Reb Yirmiyah Bar Abba, and Reb Yirmiyah, who entitled the son to the properties, says, Reb Yirmiyah Bar Abba says, E Saga Daitach, Kinyan Peros ki Kinyan Haguf Dami. If you were to think that the Kinyan Peros that the father had, or I should say that the husband had, that the father had in the source above, ki Mayis Av Umayis Aben B'chayo Av, where the father died but the son predeceased the father, Amay Is Le Lalokeach, why would the purchaser get anything? Ki kazavin, if you were to say that Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Aguf, when that son was selling the properties in the Tanaic source above, ki kazavin hai, lavdi de kazavin, he was selling something that wasn't his. Because the father had maintained for himself the Kinyan Peros. Elo lav shma mino, we rather see from here that the sale of the son was a successful sale. This shows us Elolav Shmami no Kinyan Peros Lav Kikinyan Aguf Domi. The Kinyan Peros that the father had is not tantamount to Kinyan Aguf. And as a result of that, Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba entitled the son in that story, Reb Shmuel Bar Abba, to the properties, because his mother's husband Rabbi Abba by name, had only in it a Kinyan Peros, and that's not Kinyan Aguf. Ahadrua lekamei de Rav Yehuda. The discussion was then sent back to Rav Yehuda. Omar Lahu, and you notice we have an inverted triangle on the side of the Gemara. We indicate this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. The triangle point facing up reflects Emdas Revi Yirmiyah, and the inverted triangle reflects the position of Rev Yehuda. So now the discussion we just heard in the name of Rav Yirmiyah came to the attention of Rav Yehuda. Omar Lahu, and Rav Yehuda says, Hochim HaShmuel, Su, Eino Doime L'Mishno Seinu. This case, the case of the mother assigning her properties to the son after she got married, that case is not similar to the Tanaic source that we quoted above. My Taima, why do you say that? Omar Rav Yosef Bishlamo Itoni Ibcha. Things would have been fine had it stated the case in the opposite direction, namely, HaKosev Nechosev L'Aviv, a person assigned his properties to his father, and then the father went and sold it, and the Lokeach would be a successful purchaser in such a case. So if the Mishnah was taught in that fashion, Ibcha, the opposite direction, namely, son selling properties to father, Ika lemifshat mina, we could conclude from there, the Kinyan Peros that the son has, Lav Kikinyan Haguf Domi. It's not considered as if he has a Kinyan on the principle of the land itself. And therefore, the kinyan that the son had, which was only a kinyan peros, enables the father's sale to be a good sale, because the son did not have a kinyan on the goof. The son, in that case, had everything been stated in the opposite fashion. You're dealing with a son that was in possession of property from which he was gaining the fruits, but then he transferred it to his father. So had the source been taught in that direction, and the sale that the father conducts would be considered a sale, we would have been able to conclude that the kinyan peros that the son had maintained for himself we would have been able to conclude that it's not kinyan aguf. Elahashta dikotoni, but now that it doesn't teach it like that, but rather hakesiv nechasiv livno, the father assigned properties to his son, and then the son went ahead and sold them, and we say that the sale is a good sale, mishum deroi liyorshahu. The whole significance of the son's sale of the properties that he was assigned to by his father, the whole reason that the son's sale is significant is because the son was fit to inherit. He was roi liyorshu, he was fit to inherit, and that's what gave him the power to conduct the sale. This is in contrast to the case of Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. He was not in the position to inherit his mother. The inheritor of the mother in that case would have been the husband. So what has Rav Yehuda demonstrated? Rav Yehuda has demonstrated the reason for him to have assigned the properties to the father. A correction to the husband, namely Rabbi Abba. And as far as the Tanaic source is concerned, just to repeat the point, we don't see in that Tanaic source that Kinyan Peros is not Kinyan Aguf. The reason that the son's sale in the source above was effective is because the son was Roy Liorsho. Amale Abaye. Abaye takes issue with what Rav Yehuda just claimed. That's why we have a triangle with the point facing up. Otu bro yoris abo, abo lo yoris bro. You described the case of father assigning property to the son and then the son's sale as being effective because he's roi liyorsho. But in the opposite case, the father is actually roi liyorosh es b'no. In the event that a man had, let's say, one son and no other children, and then the son died, who inherits that son? As if the father is still alive, that father inherits the son. So to describe the source above as the effectiveness of the son's sale was because he's Roy Liorsho, in contrast with the opposite direction, that's not true. There's no grounds for making that contrast. As Abaye says, is it so that a son inherits his father, but a father doesn't inherit his son? That's not true. Elo la'avruchinu l'nichsi mibrei ka'asi. The father who had assigned his properties to one son was attempting to remove other children from gaining possession of those properties. Avruchinu means literally to chase away. He was trying to chase away his properties from his other sons. That was his purpose. Hochanami la'avruchinu l'nichse me'achva osi. We apologize, must make a correction of an inaccuracy. In order to do so, let us learn the Rashi together. Dibur Masl Ela. We're looking at Rashi about a third of the way up from the bottom. Ela al Korchach, after having established that not only is a son viewed as an heir to his father, a father is also a potential heir of his son. They're on equal footing in that sense. Ela al Korchach bra de kosav nichsi lavua, the theoretical case where the son assigns properties to his father. Boni Islay, that particular son has his own sons. V'hai dekosav nichsi lavua, that which he transferred his properties to his father, lavruchinu miboni kosi. This son was obviously interested in avoiding his own sons, the grandsons, of getting possession of it. The chi mayis, but when the son dies, lo yarsu le boni elavua, his own sons won't inherit, but rather the father, which in this case would be the grandfather, the father of the owner of the property who transferred it to his father, would be the heir and not the grandsons. V'chi have toni ipcha, have amris, and when the opposite is taught, namely son assigned properties to his father, have amris hasam dekoni lokeach, where the father who conducted the sale, and we say the purchaser becomes the gainful owner, dekoni lokeach shelokol min av, that one who purchased from the father gets it. Havi taimal mishum. How is it such? The kinyan peros sheish leben, the continued kinyan peros that son maintained, lav ki kinyan aguf, who? It's not as if the son had the principle of the property anymore. V'chizovanav tidei kozovan, and when that father sold the properties in that theoretical case, the sale is a good sale. He was selling his own property. Hochanami, by the same token, in the case that is featured in the Tanaic source, Hakesev Nechosav Livno, Vadai Boni Achrini Islay. The individual, the father that was assigning the properties to his son, that father had other sons. Why was he assigning his properties to one son? Lavrechinu meyachov mishar bonav shel av hu dekosav lei. He was trying to make sure that property would not get into the hands of this particular son's other brothers, namely the father's other sons. U midamrinon konalokeach, and from the fact that the sale that son conducted was a good sale, that shows us shmamino kinyan peros lav ki kinyan haguf domi. The kinyan peros that the father had maintained for himself is not considered as if he maintained the ownership of the principal, and hence the son's sale to the lokeach was able to take hold. So we're showing that in the Tanaic source of Kesev Nechosov Livno, the sale that son then conducts is a binding sale, shows us that the Kinyan Peros that the father maintained is not Kinyan Aguf. The Gemara goes on, Elomai Eino Doime L'Mishnosenu. Once we've established that everyone agrees with Reish Lakish that Kinyan Peros is not Kinyan Aguf, what is the difference between the Tanaic source and the ruling that Rav Yehuda had mentioned, where the property was granted to the husband of that woman? After all, the husband had merely Kinyan Peros on it. And you're telling me now that Kinyan Peros is not Kinyan Aguf, so that when the mother died, So what? The husband had a kinyan peros during her lifetime on those properties. When she dies, the son inherits. Why did Rav Yehuda, in the above mentioned case, where you see the inverted house, four lines from the top, why did he assign the property to the husband? Answer, Mishum Takonas Usha, based on a special rabbinic enactment called the Takona, made in Usha. Usha was the name of a place where the Sanhedrin had sat in session. They made an enactment. Yomar Biyosi Bar Chanina, Ba'usha Hiskinu. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina is an Amora. And he tells us that in Usha they established, they enacted, Oisha Shemocha B'nichse Malug B'chai B'aylo Mesa, a woman who sold her properties, who transferred ownership of her properties during her husband's lifetime. And she died. Habal Moitzi Mi'ah Lukuchos, the husband extracts the property, retrieves the property from those purchasers based on this takona, this special enactment. And therefore, says Rav Yehuda, I rejected the son and established maintenance of the properties, ownership of the properties, in the possession of that husband. The continuation of the Gemara is a rather extensive discussion, trying to show a Tanaic basis for Takonas Usha. Up till now, we saw Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina presenting us with that information. Can we say that Takonas Usha is based upon Tanaic sources? Mr. Shem, in our next shir, will get into that. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Mark Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.